Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Cheap Seats Chatter. Right now, the best baseball podcast to grace your ears. I am Alex Clark, your host, joined as always by the infallible and quite credible Matthias Almakurasaki and Ryan Splash Potts, my main men on this glorious Monday evening. I would like to know, as we start every podcast, how you guys doing today?
Hanging out, you know. It's a Monday evening where there was no Mets baseball. There was no football for me either. My team was off too. So, you know, it was just a chill day, you know. It was pretty nice in New York. My parents and I just went and tried to see Jupiter. I'm doing all right, and I'm looking forward to tomorrow, because tomorrow my family is taking my nephew to his first baseball game. So that's very exciting.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I love that.
Hey guys. So in my old neck of the woods, the Braves are balling out. The Ravens are balling out. The Cavs are about to go 82-0. Life is good. You know, I've been spending the last couple of weeks with my grandmother. That's always a good time. So, you know, just living the life, you know.
Hey man, no other way to be doing it. Me personally, I am currently now in the last week of my current job. Now I'm going to be taking a couple of months off. It's mandatory, but I'm still going to be getting paid during it because I am amazing. No, but things are going good overall here. Yesterday, I will say, as a Mariner fan, was a horrible, very bad, no good day. But we will talk about that a little bit later on in the show. But there was an achievement that happened since our last podcast that we need to talk about. Very few men in baseball have accomplished such feats. I mean, there's always the joke about the hardest thing to do in baseball is, in any sport, is to hit a baseball. A fastball coming at you at 90 plus miles an hour. One of the hardest things to do in sport. This man not only did that, but got solid contact to knock it over the fence, not once, but 700 times over an incredible stretch of a career, lasting right now 22 years. A legend amongst our game that, in my opinion, is sure to be a surefire first ballot Hall of Famer. The machine, Albert Pujols. We've talked about him a good bit over the podcast, on the podcast over the last several months. And it's always been about one question. One question. Can he reach the milestone? Can he reach 700? And just a few days ago, in LA of all places, he accomplished that feat by knocking two home runs in the same game, giving him 21 on the year and 700 for a career. Guys, I'm one of the people that at the beginning of the year, I did not think he was going to get to 700, especially considering that the last time he broke 20 home runs was 2019. Right? Actually, no, sorry. 2021, he technically did break 20 home runs. That was through multiple different teams, though. But I'm looking at this, and I'm just so happy, you know? This is a player that I grew up really watching. There are very few players that you end up fearing whenever, as a fan especially, you end up fearing whenever they came to the plate. Pujols was at the top of that list. And even this year, as he's 42 years old, doing a retirement tour with Waino and Yadi over in St. Louis, every time he comes into play, there's almost a sense of reverence that fans have, players have, because of what he's done. And he's done a lot of it pretty quietly overall. I mean, the man has been in the MVP voting every single year from 2001 all the way to 2012. That's including a rookie year where he did win Rookie of the Year in the National League in 2001. Gee, I wonder who won in the American League. But I want to get your guys' thoughts on this. We couldn't do a podcast to kind of try and talk about the achievement itself right after it happened. So now that it's sat down for a little bit, guys, an incredible milestone. What were your guys' reactions when you first saw it?
I mean, in my opinion, Albert Pujols is the greatest hitter I've ever watched. At least prime Albert Pujols was the most dominant hitter I've ever seen. Because bear in mind, when I was growing up, you know, by the time I was like really invested in baseball, Barry Bonds was about to be out of baseball. You know, A-Rod was, you know, his reputation was tarnished by the steroids. Albert Pujols, from what we know, did not take steroids, and he was an absolute monster with St. Louis. He was averaging 40 homers and 128 RBIs with about a .330 batting average every year. I mean, obviously, he fell off with the Angels due to injuries and all that, and it was a pretty sharp decline. That's the thing, is that this year with St. Louis, it's the lowest OPS of his career, of his St. Louis career, at least, which, I mean, to be fair, he has an 860 OPS and an OPS over 1,000 in the second half. But that number is still better than anything he ever did with the Angels. And, you know, he's really turned back the clock this year. I mean, I am so, so happy for him, especially because coming into this year, like you said, Alex, I didn't think he was getting to 700. I mean, he is sitting at 679. I mean, 21 homers for a guy who's basically a part-time player at this point. That's a tall order. But he's really, really dialed it back to his early days with this second half he's had. And to do it 699 and 700 in the same game, I mean, only four men now have reached 700 home runs. And think of how many players have played Major League Baseball. He's one of just four men to reach 700. Heck, he's only one of two men to have 3,000 hits and 700 homers. Him and Hank Aaron. So, I mean, congrats to the machine. I mean, I couldn't really think of a better guy who plays the game currently to do it. And, I mean, he still has a postseason to go. I just wish he never, you know, lost time to those injuries or to the COVID pandemic season, because for all we know, he could have the all-time record right now.
So I'm going to take this in a slightly different direction. In the 150-plus year history of Major League Baseball, counting Negro Leagues, counting everything I can possibly count here, there have been 224 players to hit 37 home runs in a season. 224, remember that number. History of the league, sport that's had tens of thousands of players. 224 have ever reached 37 home runs in a season. Okay, 119 have done it twice. 119. 80 have done it three times. 46 have done it four times. 33 have done it five times. 25 have done it six times. 17 have done it seven. 12 guys have done it eight times. Six guys have done it nine times. Five have done it 10. And Aaron and Ruth did it 11 times. Albert Pujols, for 22 seasons, has averaged 37 home runs per 162 games. I know that's not exactly the math you want there, but for his entire career, a 22-year career that has spanned my entire life, I am a college graduate. Albert Pujols made his debut within a month of me being born. And at this point, I've been a college graduate for 6 months, and he just hit home run number 700. Or for 4 months, sorry. He has averaged 37 home runs a season for 162 games per 162 games for 22 seasons. This is like a 37 home run season is a once in a career type accomplishment for, you know, one out of 100 players, one out of 1,000 players. Very few ever reached that peak. Pujols did it and was on that pace year after year after year after year after year after year. And the scariest part here is with how, I'm going to say inconsequential, how inconsequential his time with the Dodgers and Angels were. You think, oh, well, he's slowing down, and he did slow down. But he was so dominant his first 11 years in St. Louis that he just, this was not a record of longevity almost for Pujols. This was a record of how freaking good Albert Pujols was the first 11 years of his career. You know, through 2011, he had 445 home runs. That's 40 a season 42 per 162. OPS over 1,000. OPS plus of 170. That's, you know, that's where Trout is. That's where Gehrig is. You know, this is where some of the greatest players to ever live had that. And Pujols was there for a decade. And he made so much traction. And, you know, 2,000 hits is in his first stint with St. Louis, 445 home runs. And it's just a master at work. It is a machine at work. And it's just awe-inspiring. And I'm actually surprised Alex didn't mention MLB Power Pros legend, Albert Pujols, who was one of the best players in the game. And I agree with Mac that I came into the season thinking Pujols doesn't really have a shot here. He's going to be a lefty platoon guy, right? So you're already limiting to maybe 40 games, 50 games a year, something like that, but that he gets 2, 3, 4 at bats. And then he'll be the occasional pinch hitter type, like extra innings or whatever, when you face a lefty reliever. And it just kind of happens that, oh, well, didn't play well in the first half. He has been the hottest hitter in the National League since July 1st. Like, better than his teammates, Arenado, Goldschmidt, better than Freddie Freeman, Austin Riley, Pete Alonso, some of the best players in the game. And it's Albert Pujols who has the highest OPS by National Leaguer since July 1st.
I mean, yes, MLB Power Pros legend, obviously. To go back even further than that a little bit, MLB Power Pros 2007, the final battle of the success mode against Major League All-Stars, the one All-Star that you actually meet is Albert Pujols. So yeah, that's a cool little bit of trivia there for you. Another trivia at the end of the show. But as a first baseman myself, I loved Pujols. He was one that truly defined what it meant to be the position. Because while the defense wasn't, you know, the greatest thing anyone's ever seen, no one is ever going to say, man, I want Albert Pujols for his glove. Which, I mean, to be fair, gotta give him some credit. He does have a couple gold gloves under his belt, but not what I'm talking about here. As a first baseman, your main job is to hit. That is what people say you got to do as a first baseman. You've got to be able to do that one task. And no first baseman that I've watched, that I've gotten to watch, has done that job even near as well as Albert Pujols has. Pujols is the guy that basically turned being a first baseman. I'm going to be honest, he made it more sexy. That's how good he was. He was fantastic at the dish his entire career. And that's, again, we're talking about a 22-year career that this guy has done something. Like, to give an idea, I'm looking right now through baseballreference.com, right? And in every single year between 2003 and it looks to be, yeah, and 2010, I'm not counting 2011 for a very obvious reason, he led the league in not usually just one, but multiple offensive categories. The one difference between that is 2007, where he led in one category, but again, we're not talking about that category that much. I look at this guy. How can you not see a legend? How can you not see an absolute living legend? Even MLB The Show paid respect to the machine today as they dropped a 99 overall milestone card. That it's the first time they've actually adjusted card art for a milestone where it's everything's in fireworks and it looks amazing for it. Like, I really love talking about Pujols. I know it sounds like I'm probably struggling to find words to say. No, I'm trying to sort out everything I'm thinking right now. He's a guy that has truly revolutionized the position. He's a player that every time you heard the name, you were either A, yay, if he was on your team, or were screwed if you were on the opposite side of it. And I'll bring one last little bit here, and then we can move on to field, like, or to add on more things. On top of things, the guy's a freaking humanitarian, too. Like, this guy in St. Louis helped set up several different children's hospitals, making full programs for disabled kids. This is he has the key to the city. I mean, What more do you want from a guy? A legend on the diamond, a legend off the field, and one that honestly is going to go down as one of the all-time greats. If you look at all-time greatest first baseman for that round, Mount Rushmore, there's no way you're not at least considering the machine there. Are there any other final thoughts we want to get on to when it comes to Pools?
I just want to throw out there, I mean, it's not like he was a super highly touted prospect either. I mean, he was a 13th round pick out of a community college in Kansas City, and not a lot of people saw the potential necessarily. And then when he broke camp as the third baseman in 2001, he immediately became a star. I mean, hitting 37 homers as a rookie and driving in 130 runs. I mean, heck, he probably could have won more MVPs if that Bonds guy wasn't around. I mean, he was his first 4 years, he was fourth, second, third in MVP voting. Then finally wins his first one in 2005 when Bonds was hurt. But I mean, he could have won in 06. I think he should have won in 06 over Ryan Howard. He won in 08 and 09. Heck, he had a case in 2010 too. I mean, he won three MVPs, but for all we know, he could have had way more. So, I mean, he was a fantastic defensive first baseman too. I mean, I know that at first he was a third baseman, then they put him in the outfield for a little bit. I mean, heck, I don't even know if we've acknowledged the fact that he has 685 doubles too. I mean, he's just been just a menace in the batter's box his entire career. So it, you know, those years in LA were kind of tough to watch, at least, you know, and he was all right for the Dodgers last year, but I mean, he's made the most of being a part-time player this year. And now he looks like he was worthy of that spot in the All-Star game. The one last thing I will add is that the Cardinals are almost certainly going to be in the playoffs this year. And he has a fantastic career postseason line, which is a .321 batting average with 19 career homers and 1,007 OPS. So watch out for Albert in the playoffs. I know the Cardinals normally have all sorts of tricks up their sleeves, but this is going to be his last postseason, and I feel like he's going to go out with a bang.
Yeah, I think we might get awfully close to like a Guardians Cardinals like bizarro world series that I don't think any of us would be happy with. But to your Mount Rushmore point, I think Pujols is very clearly entrenched with Lou Gehrig on that, and you can have an argument beyond that. Fox, Bagwell, Frank Thomas, if you don't count him as a DH. Maybe Miguel Cabrera, maybe if you think about that. But Pujols is an all-timer. What a career for the machine.
The machine is truly one of a kind. We'll never see another like him. I always go back to the fact that we say that he is such a good guy too, because we talk about a lot of baseball players that really aren't that weren't good teammates, that weren't good people like that. And I remember the story, I don't remember who it was, so I'm going flying a little off the cuff here, and my apologies for that. But I remember this story I heard where Albert Pujols gave a necklace to another player. And he was talking about it, and on the day that he got that necklace, he hit a mammoth home run. And the media came over to him and pointed out the necklace, and they're like, hey, can you tell us a little bit about that? He goes, yeah, Albert gave it to me. And it was a pretty big necklace overall. Like, it had a bunch of bling on and all that fun stuff. And they said, oh, wait, is Albert? I was like, how does it compare to Albert's? And he said, and basically without skipping a beat, he said, I can't compare mine to Albert's. Albert's was just it was like a marvel to look at. Anyway, with all that, again, congratulations to Albert Pujols. So unbelievably well-deserved for the machine reaching that 700 plateau. We're going to move on to our next subject. Not as happy, but it makes me sad. In fact, we're going from happiness to sadness as Seattle having bad time. Being real right now, Seattle is still very much in the playoff hunt, and they have a magic number right now, I believe, of 7. I could be fully wrong on that, but either 6 or 7. And it doesn't feel like that. It really doesn't. People are scared, especially after a game that took place yesterday. That is September 25th, a Sunday, against the Kansas City Royals. Now, the Royals have been out of things for a while now. Like, they never really truly were in contention. They had runs of looking really good for a little bit, but that was about it. I look at this game and Seattle, I don't know what Seattle did. I'm going to be real with you. Seattle at one point in this game had an 11-2 lead. If you have a 9-run lead, okay, just to give an idea, a save usually is 3 runs. If a save is only optional if you have 3 runs. The kind of unwritten rule, but usually the kind of benchmark for having a position player pitch because you've given up the game is 7 runs. Seattle had a 9-run lead going into the bottom of the 6th inning. And what happened in the bottom of the 6th inning, after, mind you, in the top of the 5th, they scored 8 runs. They scored a mammoth amount of home runs. Of runs, excuse me, not home runs, just runs. After getting walk, 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 hit by pitch, walk, walk, walk. In the bottom of the 6th inning, Kansas City scored 11 runs, taking the lead, which Seattle would never be able to reclaim. They did get 1 run in the 7th, so it finally became a final score of 13-12. But after a loss like that, there were a lot of questions to be had. I'm bringing this up purely because I want to get your guys' takes on what this means for Seattle going into the playoffs. Because I know that we talk about there's the adage of baseball is a marathon, not a sprint. But when you get to the end of the season, it kind of is a sprint. I mean, right now, Seattle is in possession of one of the wild card spots. In fact, they currently have the 3rd right now, trailing Tampa Bay by 1/2 game and ahead of Baltimore by 4 games. Where Baltimore's elimination number right now is at 7. So, with that, I want to get your guys' ideas here. Should Seattle be panicking after not just a game like this, but Seattle had a horrid, and I mean that by every stretch of the word, horrid road trip, where over their last several games, spanning from the Los Angeles series that started on the 16th to the Kansas City game that finished on the 25th, they won a grand total of 3 games. 3. Against opponents that included the Angels, who are eliminated, the Oakland Athletics, who are eliminated, and the Kansas City Royals, who are, checks my watch, eliminated. Now, I know Seattle's had problems with teams with bad records for whatever reason, but if you guys are the Mariners fans, if you guys are the Mariners themselves, are you panicking right now? Is there something that is telling you, oh crap, something's wrong?
I mean, here's the thing is that the Mariners are playing beat up. That's the thing. You know, you look at their roster. Suarez has been hurt for the past few weeks. Julio Rodriguez has been hurt. Cal Raleigh's been battling a thumb injury. I mean, you look at this team and they're not 100%. But what does concern me is whatever the heck happened to the bullpen yesterday. This is an aspect of the Mariners we've been praising a lot, and I get it. Pitchers have bad games. I mean, look, Luis Castillo didn't have his best stuff yesterday. Okay, I mean, starters don't have their best stuff. I watched Jacob deGrom get tattooed by the Oakland A's the other day. I mean, not many of us had that on our bingo card. DeGrom having his worst start in years against a last-place team. But for the Mariners, you look at what happened to their bullpen. Festa only recorded 1 out. Matt Brash didn't record any outs. Eric Swanson, who's been one of the best relievers in baseball, only recorded 1 out. He got the loss. And it's also that so many of those runs were scored with 2 outs. I mean, that's just like, I'm trying to find words to describe how, because I feel like that's a bit of a fluke. Like, rarely do you ever see a team score that many runs, especially with 2 outs in it. So, like, I don't want to be concerned about the Mariners. I don't think that the bullpen will collapse the way it did. I get they have a lot of mileage on their arms this year. But, you know, I think the Mariners will be fine heading into the postseason, assuming they wrap their spot up. But they've also made this race get a little too close. You know, I thought Baltimore was going to be buried after they struggled against their AL East foes. But now, all of a sudden, they have a little bit of life. They're going to be... It looks like they're beating Boston right now. Let me check again. They're beating Boston 11-5 right now, so they'll be 3.5 back entering tomorrow's game, games. It's a 3.5 out with, you know, a little over a week to go. So Seattle just needs to play. I'm not asking for them to win out or anything. They just need to play average ball the next week. And they'll be in. But, I mean, I wouldn't say panic, because the other thing to keep in mind is that these teams that they just faced have nothing to lose. And when teams have nothing to lose, like, the Mets got swept by the Cubs last week. The Cubs are not a good team. When teams have nothing to lose, they magically start playing better because they're loose. You know, it is what it is for them. So I'm honestly not surprised that these teams have given them trouble. So I don't think the Mariners should be panicking, but they definitely do need to pick things up a little bit.
So my two cents, I think this is a random September game. It's one out of 162. Like, Alex, I understand that it stinks to allow that many runs. I'm looking at the play-by-play here on Baseball Reference, and this is one of the longest, like, stretches of B6, meaning the bottom of the sixth, that I've ever seen. Like, Finny inning, like, I get that's bad, but like, games like this, I'm not going to say happen, but, like, sometimes good teams lose to bad teams, like what Max said with DeGrom against the A's, right? Or the Nationals have beaten the Braves several times. The Marlins have... like the Mets and Braves aren't undefeated against the Marlins and Nationals, right? The Astros lost seven times to the A's. So weird losses happen, and in a 162 game sample size, you're going to get some really screwy results. There was early in the season, the Braves lost by 10 runs to the Nationals the day after they won by 10 runs, and Travis d'Arnaud got plunked by D. Strange Gordon on the mound. Like, I think this is just it's baseball. It's one out of 162. I don't think, you know, I wouldn't be running for the hills. I think Castillo's fine. I think everyone that pitched in that inning, you know, it's not the end of the world. Like, obviously it stinks to lose and you're in a wild card race and you don't want to drop games, but I believe Baltimore lost two anyways. So you still pick up a W in the magic number idea, and I don't know. I'm not too concerned about it. It's the kind of thing that I know you were freaking out in our group chat, like, oh, they allowed all these runs. You're right in the moment to freak out, but I don't think it means anything. I think Seattle's going to be perfectly fine. It's not going to be the difference between them making and missing the playoffs. It's not going to be the difference between, you know, them losing to Cleveland or beating Cleveland or losing to Tampa or beating Tampa, losing to Toronto, beating Toronto. It's a game that happens. You know, I'm sure Matt can count 10 Mets games this year that he wishes could just be erased. Like, I can count 10 Braves games I wish could just be erased. I'm sure there's other Mariners games that I wish you could just I'm sure you wish you could just erase.
So my problem right now is I'm not just talking about one game. Yes, that's what sparked a lot of it, but there's a bigger issue here, and this is kind of what I've been getting at. It was a microcosm of what's been really going on with this team, and what I would like to direct your attention to is Seattle's record in the month of September since the series against Cleveland, where they swept the Guardians in Cleveland, and people were looking at this team saying, like, this team is the real deal. Since then, they lost 2 out of 3 from the White Sox, won the series against Atlanta. So, and it's kind of going to that idea I said earlier about good against good teams, bad against bad teams. But aside from that one series against Atlanta, after that Like after that time, Seattle has yet to win a series. And that's what's worrying me about all this. Over the last road trip, the team went 3-7. And yes, I think the biggest part of all this is like what you said, Mac. The team is beat up. That Cal Raleigh, their main catcher, has been dealing with a thumb injury. Eugenio Suarez got hit, did a bad swing and broke the tip of his finger somehow on the swing. And Julio is out with the lower back thing. That's apparently DePoto's already said that he's going to be ready to go by next Monday. Where I worry, because yes, that one game was bad. You're right, though, Splash. It's a one game. It's a one game thing. The problem is that this is becoming an issue where the team is having these games that it looks like we should win. And I understand, you know, baseball is a weird sport where anyone can win on any given day. That's been proven time and time and time again throughout the history of our sport. But what worries me so much is that since that Cleveland series, the team has struggled. The team has not looked at all like itself. And people, like, you guys know this just as well as I do. Momentum is a huge thing when it comes to baseball. Having the momentum a lot of times is better than being a good team overall. I mean, look at the Washington Nationals winning the World Series against the Astros. I mean, I think everyone thought that the Astros were the better team. Nationals had the momentum, they won it. I'm not going to say the Braves are a bad team. I'm being very clear. I'm not saying that even remotely. Braves won the World Series coming all the way from the wild card. That happens so often in baseball. Like, where I'm worried at is that teams need to be getting hot right about now. This is the time where teams need to be heating up. And right now, Seattle is about as cold as a refrigerator. And that's what's worrying me. Am I hitting the panic button? No, because I understand that mathematics exists and Seattle right now has a pretty nice little lead to work with when it comes to the magic number. But what's worrying me is what's happening after the playoffs start. If they play against any of these wildcard teams, I'm a little bit worried. I'd be more happy for them if they played against the Guardians. Like, I understand that, like, we had this conversation on the last podcast, but right now, what's worrying me is that the team's momentum, the team's morale level is really low. You look at games from back in July, August, and the team is smiling. The team is happy. Like, they're doing their winning dance. It seems like every night, and everyone is smiling. Right now, people aren't doing that. And yes, I know that they're on a losing streak, so why would you dance? Why would you do all that? But at the same time, you could just see it in the dugout. Things are not as they seem. Things are not looking great. That's why I'm worried. Do I think they're going to miss the playoffs? No. Do I think that they're still going to make it? Yeah. What I'm worried about is the next step. If they can't start to get into a little bit of a groove. And thankfully, right now, this is coming at the absolute best time, but Seattle is now going to finish out their season with a 10-game homestand. That is going to be critical for this team. So then they can stay at home. They don't need to worry about these plane rides to everywhere. They can just do what they need to do to win. And they are going to have a very, very packed T-Mobile Park to support them. I know I probably sound like the angry homer or anything like that. I'm trying not to be. I'm trying to look at it objectively, but I'm also looking at the fact of the team has not played well as of late.
Well, I mean, the thing is that I've seen other teams, you know, struggle in September, make the postseason, and then, I mean, go far. I mean, the 2000 Yankees, I'm pretty sure, lost their last six games of the regular season. And then went and won the World Series. I mean, not to bring up my Mets again, but I remember in 2006 they went under 500 in September, and in I believe in 1986, they had like they lost four in a row for the first time in September. It happens. Teams get tired. And I'll say that Seattle hasn't had any off days during this road trip either. So they look just tired. And today they had a day off. And I think they'll definitely benefit from this 10-game homestand to end the season. So I think they'll be fine, really. But, I mean, obviously the last 10 days have not been great. But I think they'll get through it, and I think they'll make the postseason. I really agree that they have a better shot against the Guardians than they do against Tampa Bay. You know, maybe they do all right against Toronto. I know they did very well against Toronto during that 4-game set in July, but I think they'll be fine.
Yeah, I think this is just kind of like a statistical artifact of a 162 game season. Like if this little stretch was in May or it was in July, you know, who cares, right? But it's happening right before the playoffs, a week before the playoffs, and you know, that can be scary, right? And I would imagine, say, Mets fans with DeGrom or Braves fans with like Acuna being in and out of the lineup or Albies getting hurt again, whatever, like these little things are going to be like particularly, we're going to think they're particularly meaningful now because it's happening a week before the playoffs when, you know, if DeGrom allowed 8 runs to the Pirates in July, who cares? Or if Acuna missed, you know, a week of time in a random week in June, who cares? Or if Matt Olson goes 0-73 in 2 weeks in May, who cares? But, you know, it is crunch time now. So that's a fair point swinging the other direction. But I think Seattle's going to be fine. They're going to be at the bare minimum competitive against Cleveland, Tampa, or Toronto. And that's all you can ask for. You're 98-99% chance to make the playoffs, and you get 3 shots. At least 2 shots, if not 3 shots, and win 2 games, and you're moving on.
Moving on is going to need to happen if Seattle is going to make their run. And right now, like, yes, it's still a very heavy statistical, like, probability that they will make it. But, again, this team is also broken. Statistical probabilities before by not making the playoffs in 20 years. So we're going to end enough of the merger discussion there, because at this point right now it's making me depressed, but also very worried. At the same time though, yes, I do think they're still going to make it. We're going to move on to our next topic here, as we're going to go from one corner of the country to the absolute opposite corner of the country, as we're going to take a trip over to Florida. To Miami, to be fair, as right now, Don Mattingly announced that this will be his last season managing baseball, as he is retiring from managing the Miami Marlins. Fellas, first reactions here talking about Mattingly being done with the team overall and what's going to mean, at least for the Marlins going forward.
Go ahead, Flash.
Okay, so I kind of forgot that he was a manager with the Dodgers for a little bit. I just pulled him up on Baseball Reference. Like, wait a minute, he started in 2011. But anyways, I do think this is a case of, if you're Miami, this to me is more of a, I guess, a mutual decision probably than Mattingly is letting on or anyone's letting on, that it's kind of a, at least from what I'm seeing, what I'm thinking and reading through the grape leaves, that you just kind of want to move in a different direction. Mattingly has a 428 winning percentage with Miami. He's been there since 2016, just the one winning season, the one playoff season. That was a COVID year, of course. They did actually win a playoff series, but quote unquote series. But, you know, I just think it's a bit of a disappointment there. And I know it's Miami, and I know they're a perennial cellar dweller, and they have, you know, two real and legitimate playoff appearances in the franchise's history. I get that. And that winning 79 games, 77 games is a bit of an accomplishment for Miami. But I always felt like I was wanting more. And part of that was management and, you know, fire sailing every single time you got a competent player. You know, you have at one point you had a outfield with Christian Yelich, Marcelo Zuna, and Giancarlo Stanton, and all of them were All-Star caliber players, Gold Glove caliber players, at least for Yelich and Ozuna, and then Stanton won the MVP in 2017. And part of that's on Mattingly, I guess, for not getting the most out of the rest of that roster. But then part of that is just some of the roster talent Miami had. Like, they are pitching, like, guys nowadays, they're throwing out arms, they're putting guys in the lineup that are essentially generated players that are, it feels like just lifelong AAA guys. And it's just poor construction of the roster from top to bottom. And I hope management can fix that, because it just stinks for baseball that you have a team that's so catastrophically bad. Feels like every year if every year they're winning 40% of games since 2018, 39%, 35%, then they have the COVID year, 41%, 41% again this year. They've lost 90 games plus four of the last 5 years, and the only other year they weren't even 90 games played. So I'm glad that Miami is moving in a different direction, and I hope they have a coach that can match how good some of their young players are, the Alcantaras of the world, the Jazz Chisholms of the world. Miami has talent. They haven't lacked talent in terms of like having a star players, plural, but they move off so quickly, and the depth has just never been there, that even like the Hanley Ramirez, Dan Ogla days, it's like, okay, you have two really good players and maybe a couple solid pitchers. And then after that, it's like a bunch of guys that you wouldn't be surprised to see for like the Tampa Yankees. Like, they just got lost. They took the wrong turn driving to Tampa, and they ended up at the Marlins Park.
Yeah, I mean, just watching them this year, I mean, all right, you knew they weren't going to contend necessarily, but I definitely didn't think they would be taking a step back from where they were last year. And look, there have been injuries. Again, Jazz Chisholm's been hurt all year. Not all year, but, you know, he's been hurt for most of the year. He's only played in 60 games. Jorge Soler's been hurt a lot. Avisal Garcia was underperforming badly. Remember, they gave him a 4-year contract. He was underperforming badly, and now he's been hurt. You know, John Birdie's missed time. Joey Wendell's hurt. Jesus Aguilar was underperforming really badly, and he got cut. You know, Jacob Stallings hasn't done a fraction of what he was doing in Pittsburgh. I understand Stallings has not been necessarily a great offensive catcher, but still, it's been disappointing. Just you look at this team, and it's a lot of underachieving players, you know, and other than Sandy Alcantara, really, it's been a massive disappointment, I feel like. I mean, all right, the pitching staff has a lot of potential. Lopez is all right. Lizardo's all right. You know, Braxton Garrett, Edward Cabrera's been nice, actually. I really like Edward Cabrera. The bullpen has potential too, but like Tanner Scott should not have been the closer that long. Tanner Scott struggles to throw strikes. I watched him throw away a ball to lose a game. And then you watch these guys play, and Keith Hernandez has pointed this out almost every time the Mets have faced the Marlins this year. The guys aren't running things out. It looks like they're not hustling. You know, you see a lot of guys who are, you know, they're hitting ground balls and they're barely getting out of the halfway down the first baseline, even on pop-ups. I mean, you never – what happens if you hit a pop-up but the ball just, like, drops and you're not halfway down the first baseline? Well, you're going to be out. It just – it looks like the team needs new leadership. I'm not saying Don Mattingly can't be a good manager or a hitting coach. Maybe that's what he's meant to be, a hitting coach. I wasn't impressed with him in Los Angeles necessarily. And, you know, he had his moments in Miami, but really I have not – been impressed with him as a manager overall. And so credit on him for lasting 7 years in Miami. I believe he's the longest tenured manager in Marlins history, but it wasn't meant to be. And it was definitely time to move on. I don't know what this means for the Marlins going forward, but I feel like the Marlins have underachieved greatly. I know they didn't really have a ton of expectations, but yeah. Don Mattingly, while I'm sure maybe eventually someone will pick him up again, I think it was time for him to go.
And I'm with you, Mac, on this, that the team overall needs better leadership just overall. And is Mattingly the wrong person for the job? I'm not even going to say no to that. I'm going to say that for Mattingly right now, he's done his job. He's done as much as he really could. But when you have this kind of roster, like, do I think that he's the reason why they struggled as much as they have? No. But I don't think he's helped. And that's the problem. I think right now what this team needs is it does need a new bit of leadership. I think the team needs to find someone that can really help grow these players as opposed to take what he's given and win with it. This is a rebuilding team. Again, you have players, what? Jacob Stallings is your main catcher. Chisholm is your main draw at this point alongside Sandy Alcantara. But other than that, you got a lot of projects. You got a lot of young guys. You know, you got guys like Jordan Groshans. You've got guys like JJ Bladé. You've got guys, Brian De La Cruz. I mean, all those guys are young. Yeah, they have some older guys like John Birdie, who's 32 years old, but still runs like hell. But you've got to find ways to build up these young players. And I don't know if Mattingly is the guy for that kind of job right now. We've seen him go as he's been the manager for the Miami Marlins since 2016. And during that time, I mean, looking at it, he's had one winning season. And that was in 2020, the shortened season with a 31-29 record. I mean, that can't be coincidence, right? The problem I see with him is that I think that Mattingly is good when you give him a roster and he can manage it well. He's not as good at developing players, and that's what the team needs right now, in my opinion. Any more notes here for Mattingly?
Here's the thing is, there's a reason why he got dismissed in LA, and you know, the Dodgers made the postseason the last 3 years he was there, but he didn't take them the extra mile. And I understand they've only gone the extra mile one time, you know, with Dave Roberts when they won in 2020, but I mean, I think what was also telling was when the day Don Mattingly got hired in Miami. I remember this. So at the time, they had gone through a couple of different managers that year. But by the end of the year, their GM, Dan Jennings, was managing the team. And the day that Don Mattingly got hired, Dan Jennings was fired as general manager. And I thought it was a sign, like, you know, it wasn't meant to be in Miami, and he stayed there. But I think one other thing that shows that maybe Mattingly was losing the clubhouse. I mean, the whole thing with Jazz Chisholm this year, the players only meeting where he was apparently a divisive figure. I mean, something tells me, like, why wasn't Mattingly doing something to monitor that? You know, that's my concern there. So while I think eventually he finds his way back, he says he's just taking a break for now. I think he might want to try just being a hitting coach compared to managing again. Maybe he does try managing again, but I don't think that's his strength.
Yeah, I agree. I think I'm going to make a comparison to an NFL coach that I'm watching on my TV screen right now, and Mike McCarthy, that sometimes you just need to control one aspect of the game. And like, if you're the manager and you are trying to balance all these things, and it can be it, there's a reason there's only 30 manager spots, and there's a reason there's so much turnover at the spot, and that, you know, the Terry Francona's of the world, the Brian Snitker's of the world, the Dusty Baker's of the world, those are the outliers that are there for year after year after year. Baker gets job after job after job after job after job and has been at it for decades, right? So like, sometimes you just need to specialize in a role. And I agree with you that maybe becoming a hitting coach, maybe taking a smaller role, a more more pointed role rather than like a CEO type, just overseer of all things Miami Marlins or all things for your baseball team. Maybe just focus on hitting. Like Ron Washington is a third base coach, and he's going to help his guys field, and he's going to do the little things that help the guys around help the clubhouse, help the infield defense, help the guys on the base paths, things like that. And Mattingly is doing that as a hitter, or, you know, teaching up his first baseman, how to field the position, because there have been some weird moments for the Miami Marlins at first base this year. Just something little like that, because I think Mattingly is a capable baseball mind. You know, he's a legend of the game, Yankees legend, but it's some people aren't really meant to be managers, I guess. And again, there's only 30 manager jobs for a reason.
Well, regardless of the reason for it and regardless of where Mattingly will end up, again, just a happy trails to him, as hopefully, you know, I do hope he does get another job in baseball, just so then he can end on a little bit higher of a note than, you know, managing with the Marlins as he's done. But with all that being said, we're going to head to our final segment where we are doing our weekly trivia here. And last week, or last time, it was Splash given the questions. This time, I'm going to hand the mic over to Mac, who will be giving Splash and I some trivia to work through for the end of the show.
All right, gentlemen. So last week, Splash gave us, I'd say, a pretty challenging one with the 10-plus WAR players. I think I have a category that's even more difficult, and you guys may hate me for this. So sort of relating to your Mariners, Alex, the category I've picked is Seattle Mariners All-Stars during their playoff drought. So I'm starting from 2002 on. There have been 24 players who have made the All-Star game for the Mariners. I'm doing this Splash style, so you guys alternate guesses until one gets wrong.
I just want you to know I don't like you right now.
I'm not surprised, and no, yeah, you guys are probably
you're fine. That's a Mariners category, so I can't complain.
All right. I'll flip a coin, all right? I'll go Splash's heads, Alex's tails. Flip a coin. It's heads. So, Splash, you're up first.
I'm going to go with a really, really obscure player. I don't know. I don't even know if Alex knows who this guy is. Ichiro Suzuki.
That is wrong. I'm bad at counting. Ichiro made it, I believe, 9 times in that time frame. So yes, you got one off the board, Alex.
Woo! All right. So these are all just making sure they're Mariner All Stars between 2002 and 2022.
Correct.
Okay. Well, then let's just have some fun with this. Let's go, Edwin Diaz.
Yep, Edwin Diaz is correct, 2018.
Sticking with the theme of Mets, Daniel Vogelbach.
Yes, that's correct, 2019.
Legend.
You got three off the board.
All right, let's go to current Mariner right now still. Mitch Haniger.
Yes, Mitch Haniger, also 2018.
I'm going to go with Braves, minor league legend, Felix Hernandez.
I almost forgot Felix was a Brave. Wow,
you are a bum, my friend.
Felix made it in 09, 2011, 2012, 2013, 2014, and 2015. Somehow he didn't make it the year he won the Cy Young.
That makes me really sad.
All right, so you've gotten 5. Alex?
I'm going to go with this one just because it's really funny at this point to say Michael Pineda.
Yes, Michael Pineda, his rookie year.
Yep, his rookie year. 2011. That was traded for Jesus Montero.
Yes, that was a great trade for both sides, obviously.
Obviously, a great trade for both sides.
Yeah, okay. All right.
Sticking with the pitcher theme, Hisashi Iwakuma, no-hitter legend.
Yes, that was actually going to be my next
one. Hisashi Iwakuma joined Hernandez in the 2013 game at Citi Field. Yeah, he was outstanding that year. I believe he was second in the Cy Young voting. Or he was third, actually. Third behind his compatriot, Yu Darvish.
I'm going to go to one of the most disrespected by the Mariner front office here players, and one of my personal favorites in Corey's brother, Kyle Seager.
Yes, Kyle Seager in 2014, his lone All-Star appearance.
I hate that he has one All-Star.
Yeah, and he was an injury of replacement that year, I remember.
God, he deserves so much more.
Yeah, he should have made it in 2016 also. But yes, yeah, so you got Kyle Seager. So I believe you guys have eight off the board.
Okay, I'm going to go with my 2021 fantasy legend, Yusei Kikuchi.
That's correct. Yusei Kikuchi in 2021 was their only representative somehow.
Then took a nosedive immediately.
Yeah, he was like a in the second half.
Which, again, now you guys know why I basically audibly screamed when he opted out of his own contract this year, last offseason.
There were Mets fans that were trying to tell me the Mets should sign Yusei Kikuchi, but
those Mets fans are wrong, just like most Mets fans. No, I'm kidding.
All right, moving on. You have nine.
I'm going to go to Phillies legend in Gene Segura.
Yes, Gene Segura. He was one of four Mariners in that All-Star game. So you've gotten three of the guys who were on that 2018 All-Star roster. So, yeah. So you guys have 10. You're almost halfway there, Splash.
Another National League East legend, particularly with one Atlanta Braves team. Robbie Cano, don't you know?
Yes, Robbie Cano is correct. You got 2017, 2016, and 2014. So all right, Alex.
Now we're starting to get to where it's a little bit more obscure, but I'm going to go with MLB Power Pros legend and legend of the Bay Stars in Japan, and that is one Jose Lopez.
Yes, that's right. Jose Lopez, 2006. I was wondering if anyone was going to get him.
He's an MLB Power Pros legend. What can I say?
Yeah,
Yokohama Dana Bay Stars. That's the full name of the team I was looking
for. Yep. Managed by former major leaguer and also Venezuelan Alex Ramirez now. Ooh. So, yeah. So, wow, you guys have gotten 12 of them. Let's see if you can get
these
all.
These players are amazing. What do you want from me?
Exactly. All right. Splash.
Okay, I think I'm going to also dip into the MLB Power Pros 2008. Well, J.J. Putz.
Ooh.
That is correct. J.J. Putz, Mets legend, 2007. And then the Mets got him in before the 09 season. That was an awful trade. But, yes, J.J. Putz in 07, him and Ichiro were their two representatives that year.
All right. Are you ready for me to also dip into the MLB Power Pros? Well, even though it was I hated this player in MLB Power Pros. That's Brandon League.
Yep. Brandon League, 2011.
God, he just wore those orange glasses that made him look like a zombie. Like,
yeah.
It was weird.
I was at a game. He, I guess I left the game before it happened, but he blew a game against Cleveland that I was at. So yes, Brandon League, Michael Pineda, and Felix Hernandez were the Mariners reps in 2011. Somehow that team had three All-Star representatives. All right. So wow, you guys have gotten 14 of them.
Look, when you're a Mariner fan and you've not had a whole lot to root for over the last 20 years, you latch on to whatever good news you get.
Exactly. Yeah.
Which will tell you a lot about my next two picks.
Okay. All right. So to clarify, is it 2002 to 2022, or does 2001 also count?
Nope, 2002 to 2022.
Okay. So I'm thinking there's like pieces of that 2001 team that were really good, but were still good. So I'm going to take a shot in the dark here, and the closer, Sasaki.
Yes, Kazuhiro Sasaki, his last year in the majors was 2002, and he made it. So beautiful. That is also a former rookie of the year, Kazuhiro Sasaki. So, yeah, you got it.
So we said we're including 2022 as well, right?
Yes, sir.
For Julio.
Yep, Julio Rodriguez.
Yeah.
So, Julio. Yep. So yeah, you guys are doing really well here. There, I feel like there are a couple names on here I'm surprised haven't been mentioned. So, let's keep going.
Okay. I'm gonna take a shot here. Was Edgar Martinez still kicking?
Yep, Edgar Martinez in 2003 made it.
So I kind of got spoiled by a little bit of outside interference here. I'm just going to tell you that right now. But I had a family member just open the door and start dancing, heard what was going on, and they were influencing me that it's Shigetoshi Hasegawa getting yes. shiggy with it.
Getting shiggy with it. I was wondering if anyone was going to get shiggy. But yes, you are correct here.
Yep.
Wow. For full transparency, I have no idea who that is. So Alex, dude, you Shiggy saved it.
Get Shigetoshi Shiggy. Hasegawa was nice. Yeah,
getting shiggy
in 2003. So bear in mind, Shiggy only struck out 32 batters in 73 innings that year, but he had a 1.48 ERA and 16 saves. So yeah, he was good enough to be an all-star if you wouldn't believe it.
Obviously, yeah.
Yep. Okay. He is the native of Kobe. So, all right. Man, you guys are tearing through this.
I still got a good few. I'm telling you right now. I still got a few.
Okay. Yeah. Continuing with the theme of not 2000s Mariners, but maybe they were on the Mariners for longer than I think. Jamie Moyer?
Jamie Moyer is correct. 2003.
Yep. I'm also going to go with some of the older, actually, you know what? I'll go with the newer one right now just because I want to get it off the board just in case Splash forgets. Ty France.
Yep, Ty France.
This year?
Correct. There's still a couple very obvious ones that I'm surprised have not
been. Oh, no, I already know my next one. My next one's like stupidly obvious. I keep forgetting about it. I don't keep forgetting about him. I want to go with fun ones.
Okay, I'm going to go. Was Fernando Rodney an all-star in Seattle? I know he had
Yes, he was.
You bet your ass he was.
Saved 48 games in 2014. So, yeah.
Okay. This is the one that's probably the most, like, obvious one that I can't believe we haven't said yet, and that is the Boomstick, Nelson Cruz.
Yeah, I was waiting for you guys to say Nelson Cruz. Nelson Cruz made it 2018, 2017, 2015. So yeah, he made it three times. So you guys are running down the clock here. Only a few players left.
Okay, I think I have to dip back into like the 01, 02 Mariners. And I remember from one of the streams, like I can't remember his name, but he and John Boys do the Fumble Dimension, right? And they did one with Seattle. Was Freddie Garcia on that, like 02, yes. 03?
Okay. Freddie Garcia was an all-star. He was not good in 02, but he made the all-star team. So I'm doing my math, and there is one player left.
Alex. That's the problem. I don't know if I can get the last player left.
I will be very disappointed if you don't get this one. Come on, dude.
We're down to the last one. I mean, give me just a second. As I feel disappointed, in myself too at this point. I can't. Because I've already said the ones this year. Like,
this is like me whenever I do a baseball Sporkle quiz. And yeah, I'm like, no, one away.
It's one that I'm like, just what the heck is going on? Like, man, I cannot remember. Because there's a few names I know it's not, and that's the thing that's tripping me up right now is I know some of the guys that it's just I know it's not, and this is gonna eat me alive, especially knowing I don't want to lose this to Splash. I know you're stupidly smart, and I appreciate the living heck out of you for it. I'm like just digging back in my memories, trying to see if I can find anything. Because where he said Edgar.
Man,
I'm sorry. I'm taking a minute. Like this no, is, I'm it, racking it, my brain trying to think of anything I can for this. I've got nothing. Like
you got nothing.
I'm going to say. I'm going to say Tom Wilhelmsen.
It was not Tom Wilhelmsen. Splash, do you have a chance to steal? And steal
okay.
it.
Okay. Yeah, I think my only shot here is back to that like 0-1 Mariners team. So other than Ichiro, the best player on that team was Brett Boone. So did Brett Boone make another All-Star game after 0-1?
You are correct. 2003, Brett Boone made the All-Star game. So congrats, Splash. You win this round. I had an interesting final trivia question in case you guys were tied at the end of that, but we will not be going to that, obviously. So good job. Very good effort, though, by both of you guys. I'm actually very, very impressed that you guys got all 24 of them. So now you know those 24 players were the All-Stars during the the standing playoff drought. So there you go.
I'm sad.
I'm surprised there was no Adrian Beltre.
Yeah,
Beltre had his only down years in Seattle. So I mean,
like I was like racking my brain for MLB Power Pros guys, right? And I'm just at a certain point, there's more likely to be a guy from the 01 team than a guy from the MLB Power Pros years.
Yeah, I mean that's the thing is the 01 Mariners had 8 All Stars. And I mean, Boone, Ichiro, Martinez, and Sasaki were all stars. Oh, and Garcia actually were all stars the next year.
Yeah, they had,
so,
in 2001, they had 8 all stars.
Yeah. That's the thing is the final trivia question I had was going to be who were the remaining 01 all stars, which were John Olerud, Mike Cameron, and Jeff Nelson. So yeah.
Honestly, yeah, Jeff Nelson was the other name I was going to say besides, you know, who I did.
Yeah. Wilhelmsen was very good in 2012. So, I mean, no. Normally, if you guess a random reliever who may have been a closer, it's not a horrible guess.
I mean, especially with Seattle, because for whatever reason, Seattle for years had this curse of having an amazingly good like reliever that they would just pluck out of nowhere for 1 year, and then the next year he would just be trash.
Remember, it was Wilhelmsen. I remember Danny Farquhar for a bit.
Oh, do not diss my main man, Danny Farquhar, man.
He I love Danny, man. Danny was nice, but there were like a few other players who like I remember them popping up and then disappearing. I'm glad Edwin Diaz was not one of them. But
Edwin Diaz became one of the best, one of if not the best reliever in baseball right now. So close.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I get that. So, yeah, that's my trivia for you. And, Alex, I'm curious to see what you have next week.
Yeah, considering that we're expecting that potentially Seattle may lock up a playoff spot by the next time we do a show, expect there to probably be a Mariner trivia in some place. But I might stretch my trivia wings and to see if I can come up with something truly devious because I'm so mad you splashed after the last one. Gosh darn, I did so bad. I'm not mad at you. I'm just mad at myself.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. It's tough because as soon as you say Hank Aaron, you're done. It's like, okay, one of the best baseball players ever didn't make it.
Great. It's like, oh, one of the greatest baseball players that I actually have a signed letter from. Oh.
Hey, there you go.
No, so so I'm an Eagle Scout, and one of the things that they do is like a family member will like reach out to like invite people to them, and most times, and usually a lot, most of the time it's like famous people and all that, but and obviously they're not gonna come most of the time, but a lot of times it's still something that they respect, and they'll send like at least they'll send you something,
mm-hmm.
And yeah, I have a signed letter in a scrapbook right now from Hank Aaron, so.
I see that as an absolute win.
That it 100% is. And a little story, I guess, but I'll keep this one relatively short. I didn't know that my mom was doing that, sending the letters out like that. And I got the mail one day when I was feeling really depressed about a lot of stuff. I was struggling in school and struggling trying to get the Eagle done. And I got a letter that had the Braves letterhead on it. And I was like, why do I have a letter? Why do I have a letter with the Braves letterhead? And I opened it up and read it. I'm like, okay, this is what I needed. And it helped me push through. So that was cool. But now that we have reached us, we've gone well over time. I apologize for that. I didn't think we were going to exhaust the entire list. But I want to say thank you to each and every one of you for tuning in. And thank you so much to Matthias Ulmakurasaki and Ryan Splash Potts. You can go follow Mac at Matthias_A_K on Twitter. You can go follow Splash at MrSplashMan19. And you can go follow me on Twitter at TheSportsGuy242. But for everyone here at Cheap Seats Chatter, my name is Alex. I have been your host for tonight's podcast. Have a great rest of your day. Stay safe, and I hope to see you all real soon. Thank y'all.